Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 38. "How are you doing, Frank?" asked Abdullah. He, too, was tired. The bus was smooth over the highway, and Frank was a steady driver. The interstate wasn't so curvy once they got through the Smoky Mountains. Somewhere in the night, he had turned north on I-77, headed into Virginia. "I'm okay. We're coming up to the Big Walker Mountain Tunnel. The toll booths are all dark, so I imagine that tunnel's going to be as well," said Frank. "You think it will be clear enough to drive this bus through?" asked Abdullah. "No clue. I think it's about a mile through the mountain, and I don't even know if there's a way around it. So if we can't get through, or if someone has turned it into some kind of shelter, then this may be as far as we go on wheels." "How are we doing on fuel back there?" asked Frank. "I think there is a little over half of one tote left. I've gotten used to the smell, actually," said Abdullah. "What smell?" asked Frank, smiling a little. "Yes, well, I can't smell newspaper ink anymore either. You want a cigar?" asked Abdullah. "Let's get to the tunnel, and we'll take a break. It might be smart to walk through and then come back and get the bus. Once we start through, there won't be any turning this rig around to come back. It will be impossible to back up that far in pitch blackness," said Frank. "So, worst case, we can take a couple of mile walk with flashlights?" "Perfect for a nice cigar," said Abdullah. "We'll have to be careful about fumes. Without power, it's possible there's a lot of carbon monoxide in there. No way to tell," said Frank. "What do they do normally?" asked Abdullah. "Well, they usually have ventilation fans, and the movement of cars draws fresh air into the tunnel, kind of like a conveyor belt made with cars and big rigs," said Frank. "How much further?" asked Abdullah. "Oh, I think it's about 30 miles. Better wake everyone up and get some liquids in them. See about our boys back there," said Frank. "Good idea," said Abdullah. He climbed the short set of stairs and put a hand on Lucy's shoulder to wake her. She smiled and raised her reclined seat and took a deep breath. He walked back to the middle of the bus and woke up J.J. He sat up and rubbed his eyes. "Yes, sir. What's up?" he asked. "We're coming to a tunnel. We have to check it out on foot, so it could be a chance to stretch your legs and drink some more water if you like," said Abdullah. "Sounds good. I can't tell you how much better my guts feel with gravity," said J.J. He walked a little further and leaned down to wake the second pilot they had picked up off the freeway. He put his hand on his shoulder and rocked him a little. He did not respond, but he was warm, and his breathing was shallow and even. Deciding he was still unconscious, he pulled the blanket up close to his chin and stood back up to walk back to the front of the bus. "Hey, am I dead?" asked the boy with his eyes half open, still not moving. "Oh, you're alive. No, you're not dead. But you were not far from it, Habibi," said Abdullah, turning back around.
What happened?" asked the boy.
"It appears you were piloting one of those ships up there, and you made a choice. That choice made you incompatible with that existence, and you fell to Earth." "This Earth, I mean," said Abdullah. "I'm from Arkansas. Majored in chemistry at Arkansas State and wanted to fly. I qualified to fly the F-35 and had about 20 hours, and wham, they drafted me for Space Academy on steroids," said the boy. "My name is Abdullah Bayazed. My friend driving is Frank, and his wife Lucy is up there. That is J.J., who also came to us the way you did. I'm very interested in your story, but let me get you some water. Are you up for some walking?" asked Abdullah. "My name is First Lieutenant. My name is William Ramsey. My friends call me Will," said the boy. "One can never have enough Will, I always say." "Welcome to Earth, Will," said Abdullah, reaching into the cooler for a bottle of water. He handed the bottle to Will and was pleased to see him reach for the bottle and twist off the cap. Within a few seconds, he swallowed half the bottle. "That feels good. I got tired of sipping whatever that was through a straw up there. We were weightless for about a week," said Will. "I want to hear all about it, but let me check with my driver. You
Just relax, said Abdullah as he shuffled down the aisle to the front of the bus. He stopped and sat in the seat across from Lucy. Our second pilot is awake and seems to be all right. His name is Will, from Arkansas. Are you feeling all right? Asked Abdullah. Aside from the normal stiffness that comes with hauling old bones around in seats without much padding, I'm okay, said Lucy, twisting her back slightly back and forth. We're going to go for a walk through the tunnel up ahead. Check it out. Do you know if we have any flashlights? Asked Abdullah. We probably have one or two. I grabbed our bug-out bags when we left the house, said Lucy. Your what? Asked Abdullah. We're preppers. I mean, we're always prepared, you know. Emergency food, some worn clothes, clean socks, and of course flashlights, said Lucy. I am ever amazed at you, Lucy. It is no wonder you always seem to know what to do when the shit hits the fan, said Abdullah, patting her on the shoulder. Oh, you're being modest. I can count the number of times I pulled you out of the mud on one hand. You're good in a fight yourself, Mr. Bayazed, said Lucy. Comes from having too many as a young man, I can assure you, said Abdullah. Well, having and winning are two different things, said Lucy. Perhaps a scar is a pretty good teacher, said Abdullah. Hey, guys, we're coming up to the tunnel. Just as I figured, not even moonlight tonight. I don't see any activity at all, said Frank, raising his voice over his shoulder. Pull over there and park, said Abdullah. I'll get the flashlights, said Lucy, stepping down past Abdullah to the door. Frank pulled the transmission into park and set the brake, which let out a noticeable hiss of air. Okay, Mama, I'm opening the door. Make it quick. We don't know if there are any animals out there, said Frank. She hopped down onto the asphalt and reached for the luggage door. It opened easily and the cargo area light came on. She pulled one of the two desert sand-colored duffel bags to the ground and unzipped it. Within seconds, a bright white flashlight lit up and she rummaged through the rest of the bag for a minute, retrieving another flashlight. She pressed the button on the back of it and it turned on as well. So she turned it off, put it in the back pocket of her jeans. She pulled the second bag out and retrieved three lights from it, zipped it back up, and put the bags back into the cargo area. Okay, I've got five lights here. That should do it, said Lucy loud enough for Frank to hear her. Okay, maybe we should leave someone here to watch the bus, said Frank. Who's going to steal a bus out here? Besides, haven't we moved past the whole idea of locks and keys? Asked Abdullah. I'm just saying that even moths are attracted to the light, said Frank. Perhaps you're right. Any ideas? Asked Abdullah. Well, I don't really like walking further than the mailbox, so you boys go on. I'll keep the porch light on, said Lucy. What about them? Asked Abdullah. They're still getting their land legs back. They'll be okay, said Frank. Actually, I'd like to go with you, if that's okay, gentlemen, said J.J. from the doorway of the bus. Yeah, there you go. You come on. We might need someone younger to push stuff around, said Frank. The three men walked together toward the opening of Big Walker Mountain Tunnel. With the bus headlights still on, they could see the three-story building that made up the facade over the two tunnels, one northbound and one southbound. There were no vehicles to be seen anywhere, and in the starlit night they could barely make out the edges of the pitch-black tunnel in front of them. We have three lights. I suggest we use only one at a time. It would be a bitch to get all the way in there and have the batteries run out, said Frank. May I suggest we walk on that sidewalk? It has a safety rail, said Abdullah. How far is it? Asked J.J. My guess is about a mile, said Frank. Well, that's about 90 minutes down and back if we don't stop for anything, said J.J. You want me to walk for 90 minutes? Asked Abdullah. Oh, come on, Abdullah. Did you bring that cigar? Asked Frank. I knew I forgot something. Hold on, I'll bring two more, said Abdullah, and he slowly jogged back to the bus. What did you forget? Asked Lucy, just sitting down in her seat with two pillows and a blanket. my cigars. It could take the better part of 2 hours. Are you sure you'll be all right? Asked Abdullah. Sure, I'm sure. He's asleep anyway. It's nearly 10 o'clock. That's only about 7 o'clock for my old bones. We'll be fine. Bring back a couple of chili dogs while you're out, said Lucy, rubbing her head into one of the pillows. In the middle of the night? Sounds disgusting. I suppose you want onions on it, too. I'll see what I can do, said Abdullah, nearly whispering as he stepped down the stairs and out onto the asphalt. He pushed the door close, although from the outside it wouldn't latch. He walked the 60 yards to where Frank and J.J. were making shadows with the bus lights. Sorry for the delay, but certain things must be done in a certain way. A cigar sounds good to me. I've been breathing that recycled slimy air for a week, said J.J. Yes, now would be a good time for you to tell us your story, said Abdullah, snapping the cigar cutter like a castanet and rolling his cigar between his thumb and fingers like it was a ritual of preparing it to smoke. There he goes. He owns the L.A. Times, you know, said Frank. So, this is on the record? Asked J.J., accepting a cigar from Abdullah and watching him turn the end of the first cigar rosy red in the dark space between them. No more secrets, young man. This is a new world, with men of truth and dignity, said Abdullah, blowing his exhaled smoke through his signature ring. Well, began J.J. as he applied the triple burner torch to the end of the cigar. I suppose you want me to start at the beginning, he said. Let's talk while we walk, boys. I'll light mine on the way back if I can still breathe, said Frank. They walked up the steps and onto the elevated sidewalk and walked together between the handrail and the tiled smooth wall to their left. Frank aimed the flashlight up at the ceiling so that it would light up the whole area and not blind their night vision so badly. Let me ask you a question. Whose ships are those up there? Where did they come from? Asked Abdullah. They told us they're local. I mean real local. Like before our history books began local. But they're from Earth, said J.J. Huh. You'd figure with that kind of firepower that they would still be in charge, said Frank. From what I understand, they were the losers of an ancient war over the control of this planet, said J.J. Well, damn. I mean, if they're the losers, what happened to the winners? Asked Frank. That's just it. They won, but they ruined the whole world doing it. They sunk 2 continents with their weapons, and these guys fried the atmosphere fighting back. The survivors eventually had to build ships and leave for another world. The losers moved to the bottom of the sea and rode out their poisoning of the atmosphere. Our translator said they stayed down there so long that they could not live on the surface anymore. And that's when we came along, said J.J. We came along? What does that mean? Asked Frank. The Ark of Millions of Years, said Abdullah. The what? Asked Frank. Noah, his ship. He called it the Ark of Millions of Years. The truth is that it was an entire planet. This planet. God brought it here and merged it with that Earth out there, said Abdullah, pointing to the south. That's a little outside the way I heard it. I'm not sure I believe that, said Frank. I respect that idea, Frank, but let me share with you a thought. Those people in Detroit and Cleveland a few days ago, for the most part, they believe the same way you do. That did not change the fact that technology from this ancient race from well before Noah's day evaporated their cities. You know I deal in facts. I know you can deny all you want, but that does not take away from the fact that those ships are up there, and they are probably going to attack within the next few hours, said Abdullah, taking a long puff on his cigar and blowing the smoke to the side of their walking path. I can vouch for those ships. The large ones are like cities with thousands of their people on board. The small ones hold a crew of 16, but there's only one human on each one. We were the ones doing the driving, said J.J. That makes no sense. You were the only one who knew how to fly those things? Asked Frank. Oh, no. They all knew how to fly, or at least parts of it. They were just not allowed to fly into this operation. Those were the orders from the commander himself, said J.J.
Tell me about the commander, asked Abdullah.
I only saw him one time, in Denver, just before we left. We marched out onto the flight line, and these gold ships were just sitting there, floating off the ground about 100 feet off the ends, and about 50 feet in the center. It was like 15 Empire State Buildings, end to end, just floating, silently, like Fifth Avenue balloons, said J.J., holding his hand out in front of him with the cigar.
The commander, repeated Abdullah quietly.
He was like out of some kind of history book. He was pale, like nobody I've ever seen before. His sunglasses looked like black rocks sitting on his cheeks. He told us the mission. Pile driver. He told us you were terrorists, stealing the whole world that was property of the United States government. He said that we had been hand-selected for the first space mission of its kind. He told us we would all be promoted when this was over, said J.J. with his voice trailing off.
I think armies have heard that speech a few times in history, said Abdullah.
Yeah, but those guys all got killed. He told us no one would be shooting back this time, said J.J.
What happened then? Asked Abdullah.
We trained around the clock for days with these electronic translators as the pilot showed us how to fly the attack vessels. At first, the smell was more than I could take. Those beings were fast and smart, but they were all sick, or at least they smelled like they were sick. They had to coat their skin with this oil to keep it from rotting. And the combination of that rotting skin and the oil smelled like something like almonds and fish.
You ever smell an almond grove? Asked J.J.
Can't say that I have, said Abdullah.
Well, if you did, you'd know what I mean. It's a strong smell, and then you mix in the smell of a dead mouse or a cat, and then you have the way that whole place smelled.
That ship had no windows to air it out. You know what I mean, said J.J.
So you left out of Denver, led Abdullah.
Yes, sir. We left out of Denver and sailed for the moon.
I thought I was going to die that day. Everyone strapped into horizontal seats and we pulled about 2.5 Gs for about 8 hours as we slung around the moon to build speed to catch up with this planet. And then we got through that. We lined up to attack Western Europe. The doors opened, the first 150 ships formed up and began their attack run, only to run into a debris field. Nobody saw it coming.
No survivors, said J.J. somberly.
I want you to know, there's no hatred for those boys up there. They're just following orders, said Frank.
Look, Frank, they're not all like me. There are men up there who have black hearts. They are killers, and they enjoy it, said J.J.
There are always men like that, said Abdullah.
I don't understand what makes a man like that, said Frank.
The seed of Lucifer, said Abdullah.
You mean the devil? Asked J.J.
You mean he's real? Asked Frank, shining his flashlight around the black tunnel, suddenly afraid.
He goes by many names, but his followers are here as well, born into the descendants of Cain, said Abdullah.
I believe it. I think I met some of them on this crew. They enjoy seeing people die, said J.J.
The most terrible of them enjoy seeing people suffer. It is the purpose of the blade to smell the blood and see the life drain from their victims' empty eyes, said Abdullah.
Well, they're not going to see anything from up there, said J.J.
I think your commander has a different battle in mind, said Abdullah.
Those ships are powerful enough to wipe the surface of this world clean of any life, said J.J.
Life? Yes. The souls of men? No.
Your commander wants us to be afraid. He wants us to fear death and to betray our own neighbors to stay alive.
This also is an ancient story.
I believe it is the war for the soul of mankind that your commander fights to capture, said Abdullah.
Well, He's no longer my commander. I don't know how it happened, but I turned in my resignation. I'm not following that order, said J.J.
Let's hope there are more like you.
Lots more, said Frank.
Hey,
what is that up there? Asked Abdullah.
Where?
Oh, hang on. I can focus this beam.
Well, I'll be shit, said Frank.
This tunnel has no cars in it, but there's a bicycle?
What the hell, said J.J.
Perhaps the other Earth has the rider, said Abdullah.
It does look a little out of place, said Frank.
You think?
Let's see if it can be ridden, said J.J., hopping over the handrail and letting himself down to the asphalt road. He picked up the 10-speed on its wheels and gave it a quick look.
Looks like it's in good condition.
Well, this changes things a little.
I'm not riding no bicycle, but J.J. here could ride to the end of the tunnel, make sure it's clear, and then ride back to us.
That saves us the walk. We're only a third of the way, and my hip is already hurting me, said Frank.
It's a good plan if you're up to it, my friend, said Abdullah.
I'll be back before you guys reach the bus.
Start walking. I'll catch up and let you know what's up, said J.J.
He took out his flashlight and turned it on. He gripped the handlebars with the small flashlight and stepped over the seat, bringing the pedal around to his right foot.
See you in a few, he said, stepping down on the pedal.
They watched as his light moved away from them like a white glow stick dropped into a deep tunnel.
It was quiet under Big Walker Mountain. Let us make our way, my friend. He'll be back before you know it.
I'm glad he was here. I don't even think I know how to ride a bicycle, said Abdullah.
Well, how do you remember how to do something you haven't done in a long time? Asked Frank, chuckling.
Well said, Habibi. Well said, said Abdullah.
Frank was holding onto the handrail by the time they reached the opening to the tunnel where the bus sat quietly with the headlights on. The lights inside the bus had been turned on, and they could see Lucy walking toward the front of the bus.
Well, so much for them getting a good night's sleep, he said.
You have me worried about you, my friend.
Right now I'm thanking God for that bicycle, and of course for Mr. J.J., said Abdullah.
Frank waved his flashlight at the bus, catching Lucy's attention. She quickly stepped down to the door and pushed it open. She walked quickly to Frank and put her head under his arm, wrapping her arms around him.
Oh, Frank, your hip! You didn't make it to the other side, did you? She asked, trying to lift some of the weight off of his hip.
I hope I have some morphine in that bug-out bag.
No, we didn't make it. We did find a bicycle, though, said Frank, turning off the flashlight and putting it in his pocket so he could return Lucy's embrace.
J.J., he's making the trip for us, isn't he? She asked.
Yes, Mama. He's young and strong.
Besides, Abdullah here doesn't know how to ride a bike, said Frank, laughing out loud through the grimace on his face.
Don't let him fool you, Abdullah. Frank hasn't ridden anything that doesn't have at least 2 cylinders since I've known him, said Lucy.
Yeah, but if there was a Harley in that tunnel, said Frank, as he grabbed the handrails to climb back onto the bus.
Hold on. I'll get you a couple of ibuprofen and a bottle of water, said Lucy, bouncing up the stairs.
It's clear to me now, my friend, that you are much smarter than she is, said Abdullah.
Really? Asked Frank, surprised.
Look who she married, said Abdullah, clamping his hand on Frank's shoulder and rubbing it.
I'm married above myself. I know that much, said Frank, agreeably.
Here you go, baby. Take these. Sit in that big chair and drink that water, she said, pointing at him.
Yeah, well, give us a little bit to stand outside and talk. We have cigars to finish, and we're going to look at the stars, said Frank.
He tossed the 2 tablets into his mouth and drank a third of the bottle behind them.
No worries. I was making oatmeal for Will back there. He thinks he can keep it down now.
You boys finish those nasty things out here and wait for J.J., said Lucy, lightly moving up the stairs and smiling.
One thing about a low-tech Earth... You can really see the stars, eh, Abdullah? Said Frank, puffing on the cigar as Abdullah held the lighter over the end of it.
Yes, well, I'm glad that God left cigars for us here.
There must be fine tobacco in heaven, said Abdullah, relighting his own cigar.
Wow, what was that? Asked Frank suddenly.
What? I wasn't watching, said Abdullah, now looking up as well.
I saw a bright flash up there by that star over there, said Frank, pointing.
I cannot see which star you mean. Those green ribbons of light don't look good, though.
Oh, my God, I saw that, said Abdullah.
They're catching the sun's light like a signal mirror.
Those ain't no satellites, I can tell you that, said Frank.
Dear Mother of God, they're attacking, said Abdullah, dropping his cigar on the asphalt.
Attacking? Attacking where? Asked Frank.
Anywhere they want, said Abdullah, scanning the sky for another sign of movement.
There, those three stars right there, look there, said Frank, pointing again.
Those aren't stars, said Abdullah.
Jesus, you're kidding me, right? Asked Frank.
Hey, guys, shouted J.J. from the mouth of the tunnel, standing on the pedals of the bike heading for them.
Not too soon, that is for sure. What did you find? Shouted Abdullah as J.J. approached.
There was an electric car. It was deader than a brick, so I pushed it to one side.
We can get by it, said J.J., still breathing hard.
Yes, well, we need to move right now.
Get in. Maybe we'll be safe in there, said Frank.
And they said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, recited Abdullah as they looked up together, at first one reflection and then another, flashing like golden mirrors as the armada approached the earth.
This ain't the wrath of God, and that ain't the Lamb, my friends.
Let's roll, said Frank, stepping up into the bus and sitting in the driver's seat. J.J. tossed the duffel bags back into the luggage compartment and slid the 10-speed in as well. He closed the door and latched it as Frank released the air brakes. Within seconds, he was up the stairs behind Abdullah as Frank pressed the button to close and latch the door. The bus started rolling for the tunnel opening.
They'll probably attack north of us. So maybe we shouldn't get too close to the other side of the tunnel, said J.J.
Good point. We'll go in until we can't see the opening behind us, maybe a quarter of a mile.
How deep do you think we'll be underground? Asked Frank.
I don't know for sure.
Maybe 1,500 feet, said J.J.
It will have to do.
What are those weapons anyway? Asked Frank.
Some sort of plasma device. Small, but very powerful. Worse than nukes, that's for sure, said J.J.
You mean they're radioactive? Asked Frank.
If they hit the ground, they can be, said Will, standing in the aisle behind them.
Hey, welcome back to the land of the living, said J.J.
I think it was touch and go there for a while, said Will, rubbing the back of his neck.
You were saying these weapons are nuclear? Asked Abdullah.
Not like our weapons. They don't smash plutonium like we do.
The best I can tell, they make an inductive plasma with mercury, sort of like a fluorescent light using electromagnetism to contain the pressure. Then they release it. The X-rays and germicidal UV released destroys everything in its path.
If the blast digs up the ground, all of the inorganics become radioactive, explained Will.
My orders said we were to release our ordnance before we got into the aurora. They calculated to skip the bombs off the atmosphere a little and hit the eastern seaboard, said J.J.
I had the same orders. My squadron was to hit Site R twice, said Will.
What did you say? Site R? The facility under Raven Rock Mountain? Asked Abdullah.
Yes, sir. They mean to kill President Riker.
The commander said he leads the insurrection, that he's a terrorist, said Will.
What's wrong, Abdullah? Asked Frank.
Shelley. She's there at Site R. That's where we're headed.
She doesn't know, said Abdullah.
Oh, they know, said Will.
Yeah, that broadcast from General Bainbury came from Site R. They know all right, said J.J.
No, I mean she does not know we are on the way to her.
She thinks I'm still in L.A., said Abdullah.
I think this is where we're going to stop, said Frank, letting off the accelerator.
What about the engine?
We'll have to shut it off. The fumes, said Abdullah.
You're right. We'll have to shut down and wait it out, said Frank.
You mean we'll have to sit here in the dark? Asked Lucy.
Yes, Mama. That's what it means, said Frank. How long? Asked Lucy nervously. They'll all be killed, said Abdullah, unable to get his mind off Shelley. I am sorry, Abdullah. I am so sorry, said Will, placing his hand on Abdullah's shoulder. What does it matter? A day, an hour, said Frank. Well, excuse me for caring. I'm scared, Frank, said Lucy. I'm just saying. Take a look at the big picture, said Frank. I don't care about the big picture. I'd rather drive out into the open and look into the flash than be buried in the dark under this mountain, said Lucy, leaning forward out of her seat. She's right, you know, said Abdullah. About driving out there to be burned alive by those things, asked Frank. About burying your talent, said Abdullah. What talent? What are you talking about? Asked Lucy. We could have stayed in L.A., but we didn't. These men could have dropped in the cold vacuum of space, or we could have driven right by them in the dark. But that's not what happened now, is it? No. I'm saying we have been preserved for a reason, for a purpose, said Abdullah. I don't suppose you know what that might be, asked Frank. Everything we have done, every choice we have made, has brought us to this exact spot in time. I don't believe it is to be forgotten in our fear under this mountain. Start that engine, man. We're going to Side R.